This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
You look ridiculous.
I'm golfing. This is golf attire, Mannix. What's your excuse? You look ridiculous.
I'm not leaving the hotel. You look ridiculous. What is that you have?
It's a tiger, man. A tiger.
It's a tiger shirt. Look absurd. Can we just tell the people out there, I play golf once a year, and I almost beat you a few weeks ago.
Right.
You play golf like three times a week.
I was drinking, man. I was drinking under hot LA weather, and those beers were going down smoothly.
You're the worst. You're the worst practicing golfer I've ever seen.
But I bet you I'll be a great writer.
Well, I think that ship has sailed. Sergio Mora, former junior middleweight champion, the Zone broadcaster, future Jake Paul opponent. He joins me here this week on the podcast. We are in Fort Worth, Texas, the site of Virgil Ortiz, his fight against Michael McKinson. That'll be Saturday. You can watch that on the Zone. We're going to get into that fight and also a pretty good fight on the undercard. But Sergio, I want to start with last weekend. Danny Garcia made his return from a nearly 20-month layoff. He beats Jose Benavidez Jr. by decision. Officially, it was a close fight, but the draw scorecard was just awful. I thought Garcia won it, about 118-110. I thought he looked good at junior middleweight. I know Benavidez is not a natural junior middleweight, and he has not been the same since that shooting that impacted his leg several years ago. But for Danny Garcia to come off a long layoff and to fight and fight that well in his first fight back, not look like he had any ring rust, looking like he had good speed, good accuracy, all the things we're used to seeing from Danny Garcia, that was about as good as you can get, I thought, from Garcia. What did you think?
Well, look, Benavidez is a good fighter. He's a good fighter, and I expected it to go the distance, not only because of the layoff, but Benavidez has that background. It was an all-in-all good matchmaking, I believe. If they would have put him in with someone that he would have just smoked, he wouldn't have learned nothing out of it. So he got 12 rounds out of it. Well, he went the distance. He got every single round of work, and he got a little scared with the scorecards, even though I do believe he won clearly. Those are all things that you need moving forward. Now, the weight division, I didn't really see a big difference because Benavidez is not a big junior middleweight. So we didn't really find out how he's going to handle himself against a natural 154-pounder. So that is the only question mark that was left hanging. But let me touch on something, Mannix. I didn't know that Danny Garcia was struggling with mental health issues. And this is becoming a pandemic itself, you know, after this whole quarantine and everything else. And I know a lot of people in my personal life that are struggling it as well. And this is, like I said, the new epidemic. And fighters, you know, I've always had to deal with things in my camp that, you know, stress and emotional issues and personal issues and family issues, financial, every single issue you could think of while I'm preparing for a fight. And I just gotta admire fighters that go through it like Danny. He made me tear up, man. I don't even know the guy. You know, when I was watching it, he made me tear up because he was so strong. You know, he's like, I went through it. But here I am, man. I'm back, you know, and he kind of wiped the tears and put the smile back on his face. It was a powerful moment, man. And the fact that he did it on the big stage showed you what type of fighter he is.
Well, what do you think of that? Because Ryan Garcia came out last year and talked about the mental health issues that he was going through that forced him to take some time off of his career. And while many people were sympathetic to him, there were plenty of people and plenty of people in boxing that were dismissive of it. That said, weak. They, you know, basically implied that he was weak. And even Danny Garcia, you know, in the aftermath of Garcia opening up the way he did, I scroll through Twitter and there are people in boxing, boxers themselves, laughing at it in a way, dismissing it as something that's not legitimate. I mean, what do you think of that?
Listen, man, I'm not going to get canceled on your show, so I'm not going to tell you, you know, everything that I feel. But fighters, let me just put it like this. Fighters don't believe in weakness. We cannot let that permeate our body. Is that the word, permeate? Let it break through our body and our skin, because we just need every form of strength, especially mentally. So to admit that you have an issue going on in your head when you have a big fight coming up, it's just going to be a problem. That stigma they're gonna apply to your name, that reputation you're gonna have afterwards, it's not a good look, man. It's, you know, and it's sad to say, but it's just, you can't allow it. That's why a lot of fighters,
you don't have a choice though. So
that's why a lot of fighters don't let you know about it. That's right, why a lot of athletes.
But nobody's
going to
sit there and say Danny Garcia is not tough. Like Danny Garcia was.
Whoever said that, I'll slap them themselves.
No, but like,
I would literally slap them people themselves.
If you are like criticizing Danny for crying and opening up like that, you're implying that he should be mentally tougher, and that's, I think that's just dead wrong. Danny Garcia grew up on the streets of Philly. His father obviously went through all the things he went through. I don't think it has anything to do with toughness and how mentally tough you are. Sometimes these things happen to you.
Those same people saying that he's not tough for crying probably cried when they watched The Notebook or E.T. or something.
You cried when you watched The Notebook.
Yes, I did. I cried when I watched Shawshank Redemption. I'm an emotional person, Mannix. I got heart here. In and out of the ring, I got heart.
Do not. And even the people that were, to bring it back to Ryan Garcia for a second, even the people that were praising Danny Garcia were some of the same people that were criticizing Ryan Garcia. I mean, Ryan Garcia was one of the first boxers to come out and say, I'm dealing with some mental health issues, and he got killed for it by a lot of different people.
Well, he got a lot of criticism because he said that he canceled the fight and then he posted pictures that he was in an island with some beautiful woman.
Yeah, but I saw Rick Merigian, who I know, he said something about that on Twitter too, and that made me kind of cringe. The manager for Jose Ramirez and others.
That's what you're
talking
about.
Like, he just, that bothered me because who cares where you are or what you're doing to get yourself right? If Ryan Garcia just needed a break from boxing and a break from everything, he's entitled to do that. If he wants to do it on an island with a girlfriend, fine. Danny Garcia apparently chose to do it at home with his father, with his new child. Okay. I don't think it really matters where you spend your time.
It doesn't, because no matter where you go, you can't get away from yourself. I think that's a music lyric, but yeah, you can't get away from yourself. So you're going to feel that anxiety. You're going to feel that whether it's depression or anger, no matter where you go, whether you're in paradise or not. So I think this is going to be a new thing that, and I say new because now it's allowed by promoters before you'll get, you know, you wouldn't get a date before if you cancel a big fight like this, or they'll blackball you, or they'll put you aside, or they'll give you a smaller fight. A lot of times you'll get punished for this. It happened in my career. Promoters will punish you for canceling, especially the closer the fight is. Not only that, but networks are going to start having, you know, their doubts, saying, well, look, you know, how about if he has another problem? These are all things that are new to boxing, and we're evolving as we go. And this new mental issue, anxiety, depression, it's here to stay, man. It's only going to get worse.
You know what struck me was when Danny Garcia was talking to Jim Gray in the ring afterwards and talking about how, you know, kind of, and even at the press conference afterwards, talking about how he kind of started crying. You know, he was just, you know, just for no reason was crying before the Errol Spence fight. That story is almost identical to Ryan Garcia's story. Ryan Garcia told me the exact same thing. When he went into the gym last summer, and then he was out of the gym, he had to leave. He's driving around with his manager, Lupe Valencia, and he said, I just started crying, and I couldn't stop crying. I didn't know why I was crying. Like, the stories are identical. That tells me this is very real.
That is the power of the mind, and you can't escape those thoughts. I bet you they think about it morning, afternoon, and night. They can't get away from those thoughts. And the repetitive feeling of that anxiety has to get to anybody and break people down. And if the only release is crying, shoot, it's better than other vices that, you know, fighters have relied on, including myself, outside of the ring.
Many,
you know,
vices for you.
So look, fighters have always dealt with their issues by, you know, drinking or drugs or womanizing or gambling or skydiving, any adrenaline rush
just
that can compare
Sergio
with it.
More greatest hits right there.
Hell yeah. I'm about to go golf. No, but listen, we go chasing a thrill. We go chasing something, and then finally we realize that we're chasing an empty ghost. We're the issue. We're the problem. But if you could figure that out early in your life and your career, maybe you can, you know, transition out of it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree. It's good to see Danny Garcia back healthy physically, mentally, and ready to go. I like what he was saying afterwards. I know Tony Harrison called him out and wants a fight against Garcia at 154. Obviously, Jermell Charlo is out there at 154. Danny doesn't seem all interested in those types
no
of fights. Danny's looking
way.
At, you know, a Keith Thurman rematch.
I'm already nodding my head.
Yeah, Keith Thurman rematch, which makes a lot of sense for him. Thurman gave him the first loss of his professional career. He's looking for a fight. If Thurman moves up to 154, it's not like you're taking on a true junior middleweight. And, you know, look, he keeps talking about Arislandi Lara as a title holder at middleweight. To be clear, Lara is a fake title holder at middleweight. He has the secondary WBA belt. But if he wants to fight Arislandi Lara at 155, that's okay too. Lara's well past his prime, and that's a decent fight for Danny Garcia. So one thing Danny showed in the ring is that he's still in his mid-30s, a high-level guy, and should get in with another high-level guy close to his size as he moves his career forward.
Yeah, like overweight welterweight will be fine with me. It's not someone too tall. You know, you got this 6'4" kid now, Sebastian Fundora.
Yeah.
You want to stay away from Fundora. You want to stay away from anyone that's over 5'11" or 5'10".
Even Charlo too. Charlo's
too big. Yeah. So you want to blown up welterweights, guys that are that still have a name, and you're bound to find one. Thurman is the perfect one because they got history, and Thurman's coming off a layoff. He's been inactive as well, but he's still a powerful puncher. Both of those guys are experienced power punchers, so that's a perfect fight right there.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we are here in Texas for the Virgil Ortiz Michael McKinson fight. In New York, we were supposed to see a fight between your pal Jake Paul and Haseem Rahman Jr. That fight was canceled last week because Rahman could not make the contracted weight of 200 pounds, could not make the contracted weight of 205 pounds. Sergio, there's been a lot of back and forth between Jake Paul and Rahman over the last few days. Jake Paul saying, look, he agreed to go from 200 to 205. Rahman said he couldn't make anything lower than 215. Rahman saying Jake should have moved up. Where do you fall? Who do you side with in this dispute?
We're really going to go.
We are.
And talk about Jake Paul.
We're talking about it because you want to fight the guy anyway.
I would love to fight the guy just to shut him up, just to take him out of the equation, the boxing equation. But it's not going to happen, man. It's because he's not going to fight a real fighter, especially a good one.
Who was the last fighter you shut up?
It just does not. Man, I shut traps. That's what I do. I slap people for fun. No, listen, man. This guy, he's just not going to go away, so I got to accept him. All right, we're talking about Jake Paul.
I asked you, who do you blame? Who
do you I'm about to tell you. Whenever a fight gets canceled, you either blame the promoter from not checking up on their fighters and not seeing that they're on weight or they can make that weight, or you blame their own camp for not weighing their team, not weighing or keeping his fighter on track to make weight. You can blame the fighter himself for not taking the fight serious. Ultimately, it's the fighter. It all comes down to the fighter, man. If it's the fighter that puts his name on the dot for a certain weight that he agreed to, the fighter does that. The manager doesn't do it. The promoter doesn't do it. Nobody does it. You do it. You go to the gym every day, and you're going to put it 100%. You're going to say, all right, 75% today. Man, I don't feel so good today. Today's 60. Today's an off day. You're going to gauge how much work you can put every single day to make that weight. You know, if you got to lose 16 pounds and how much weight, what, he had 3 weeks?
About 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. My God. I've done that before. I've lost 11 pounds in one day. And I'm skinny. This dude's a heavyweight. So, no, that was one. It was an excuse and a lame one at that. Anybody that's in the boxing business could tell you that was a lame excuse. He had 4 weeks, 5 weeks to make, you know, to lose 16 pounds. Ridiculous. You could lose 3 pounds a day. And that's in a somewhat safety way. So, no, they wanted out of that fight for other reasons. You want the straight truth? I'm starting to believe these rumors that they weren't selling that fight at MSG. They weren't selling tickets. It was going to be a total dud of a show. And the whole Jake Paul persona or image of him being the new thing of boxing was going to go out the window. That's the real story.
Well, you don't know that. And
you don't know it either.
I don't. But yeah, I don't say it because I don't know it. But I believe that Jake Paul, Aseem Rahman, even with Amanda Serrano on the undercard, was going to be a tough sell at MSG. It's very difficult to sell out the big room at Madison Square Garden. I also believe that Jake Paul, Aseem Rahman, was going to be a tough sell on pay-per-view because Aseem Rahman has no following whatsoever. And Jake Paul, in all his previous fights, has been able to point to and take on guys with followings, whether it has been Tyron Woodley a couple of times, some of the lesser-known guys, Ben Askren, Nate Robinson. You go down the list of the handful of guys that Jake Paul has fought. So I think there's some truth to that fight not selling like they would have hoped. But I don't think that's why they canceled the fight. They canceled the fight because the New York State Athletic Commission was monitoring the weight loss of Aseem Rahman. They said a couple of weeks ago, listen, you can't make 200 pounds in a safe way. We're not going to sanction it above 205. To Jake Paul's credit, he said he'd go up to 205. For that fight, he'd jump up and fight him at a weight about 15 pounds heavier than he's ever fought. I don't blame this on Jake Paul at all. Sergio,
well, then there you go.
Hold on.
They shouldn't have had that fight in New York where they have stringent rules like that.
Oh, God, yeah. Why wouldn't you have a fight in a city where there's rules? Oh, my God. Don't you want to?
No, there's
different. Why don't you go to West Virginia?
Come on now. You know that there's different rules and different sanctions. Union rules.
Yes.
Look, MSG is very expensive to rent out.
That's not what we're talking about.
No, very expensive. And then the New York admission, I've dealt with them before. Very, very strict.
Which they should be.
Yeah, but not all states are like that.
Fine, but I don't criticize the New York Athletic Commission for saying, look, Aseem Rahman, we don't want you cutting to a weight that you've never fought at before and doing it in an unhealthy way.
That goes to show you, Sergio, what type of unprofessional he is, right?
I agree. This is where we agree, right? If you're Aseem Rahman, don't sign the contract if you can't make the weight.
That's one.
Making the weight is part of a fighter's job.
That's one. Two is make the fucking weight, even though you already you know you're gonna put yourself in risk. All right, I'm just gonna put it out plainly: the faster you lose the weight, the riskier it is. But every fighter does it. Every fighter does it. When we sign a contract, we have two jobs: promote the fight, make weight, and then fight. That's it. That's what we do. We're robots. We're programmed for that. He could have made the weight. He just got lazy. I'm going to put it out there. Aseem Rahman Jr. got lazy. Then he started fearing, all right, I'm going to be a shell of myself if I lose 16 pounds in 4 weeks. Nonsense. You got lightweights doing that. We do it for a living. We fight and make weight, and we lose a lot of weight. We've been doing it since we're 15 years old. We know our body. The only time that becomes an issue is when you start getting to your late 30s and your system doesn't work and break down a weight anymore. That's when you start having this issues. Not when you're a mid-20s or however
old these
guys are.
Well, he's early 30s. He's early 30s. Okay, well,
there you go. I don't know the entire situation behind it, but all I know is if you really wanted to make weight and collect that check, he would have done it.
Look, Kasim Rahman, at the opening press conference for this fight, he was asked directly about making that weight. He said, no problem. Said, I did it in the amateurs. Won't be that big a deal.
I just said that.
But his father, you know, kind of foreshadowed something bad. His father had said, look, my son has underachieved during his career. He's not taking things as seriously.
The Rock called him lazy. Yeah. He called his son lazy, and he got praised for that.
Yeah. The champ got praised for that. It looks like he was right about that.
There you go. He's right. So he has a lazy son that didn't want to put in the work, and he caused him the entire promotions. Millions of dollars got squandered, and everyone lost out because you bet on the wrong guy. You know who won't let you down?
Don't say you.
Me. I've always made weight, baby.
I'll give you that. Like, how many pounds over were you when you started training for the Forrest rematch?
I was 28 pounds overweight. And mind you, I'm skinny. Where does that weight come from?
Caesar's Palace.
I'm telling you right now. So yeah, making weight is the most crucial thing. But look, that's our livelihood. So if you want to get paid, make weight.
How the fuck do you lose 28 pounds in 6 weeks?
I'll show you how to do it because you can lose about 22, my friend.
I don't think so. I'm down a lot more lately. All right, let's move on to the fight we're at this weekend. Virgil Ortiz against Michael McKinson. This was a fight that was originally scheduled for March of this year. Ortiz had to pull out because of a muscle and blood condition that affected him. He had to be hospitalized for it. Michael McKinson stayed on the card, fought a guy named Alex Martin. He won. And now he's back with another shot at Virgil Ortiz. Let's start with Virgil Ortiz for a minute here. I've been watching a lot of the press coverage of Ortiz, some of the press stuff he's done on YouTube. He seems like
angry.
A guy. He's angry.
I loved it, man.
Like, but what do you make of that? Like, Ortiz seems to...
The bad guy.
He seems to have heard or read everything everybody said about him over the last few months. I don't know how much criticism he's deserved, but whatever he's been criticized, he has taken that to heart, and he seems to be using that going into this fight.
I think, again, every fighter, once they have their first loss, they get that taste of defeat and bitterness once they start reading and hearing and seeing all the people that turned against them. And it's not that they're turning against them. They're doing their job. It's just when you're young and you know, you don't expect to lose. Yeah, of course you're going to retaliate, and that's what Virgil Ortiz is doing. But I'll tell you what, I love it because we're not used to seeing that side. We're used to seeing, you know, Virgil be a humble guy playing the guitar, being like a, you know, one of these Renaissance men, and then he's a killer inside the ring. But we got a little Tony Montana coming out of Virgil Ortiz, like, no man, I'm going to go down after you. I'm going after you. I'm taking care of all family business. And he started with Ryan O'Hara. He let him have it. I'm not gonna be doing no interviews with you. And he did it real respectfully, but you can see the spite come out. I loved it. I want to see more of it, Mannix. I hope he goes after you next.
Well, I don't know what he can go after whoever he wants, but I didn't feel like he deserved criticism for what happened in the last fight. If it's true that he had this condition that caused him to be hospitalized, which if you read up on it, it's a potentially life-threatening condition, that's not something that should be joked about or something that should be criticized for. I will say this. I did an interview during that broadcast of McKinson Alex Martin with Bernard Hopkins. And Bernard Hopkins, in that interview, suggests that Virgil Ortiz should move up in weight. That was his suggestion during the broadcast. So it was his own promotional team that was talking about maybe it's a weight issue, maybe it's something that he should address by moving up in weight. But by all accounts, as we record this on Thursday, Ortiz seems to be in good condition. Seems like he's going to make 147 pounds. And now he gets Michael McKinson, who is an undefeated welterweight. Only two knockouts on his resume, so he doesn't have a lot of power. But his nickname, Sergio, is the problem. I'll ask you this. How big a problem can Michael McKinson be for Virgil Ortiz?
The real question, Mannix, is how long of a problem can he be for Virgil Ortiz? Because he will be a problem early in the fight. That's the reason he's undefeated. That's the reason he beats undefeated fighters. I mean, the last he's beaten four undefeated fighters in six fights. That's impressive. I mean, most fighters try to avoid undefeated fighters. He's not. So he's willing to take on all comers. We know that. In his last fight, he went through, what, four opponents? Different opponents? He accepted every one of them. That's a rarity. Fighters don't do that. They'll just cancel the fight. That shows you what type of mentality he has. And then obviously once he gets in the ring, he's one of these fighters, and he reminds me a little bit of myself, a little bit of Tevin Farmer, a little bit of these guys that have a lot of speed, a lot of skill, have a high fight IQ, but they also know that they're not punchers, so they're not going to put themselves in a puncher's way. So they make it difficult for not only the boxer, but the fans and everyone watching. But you know what? We win. And anyone that can carry a game plan from beginning to end, not giving a shit what anybody thinks and come out with a victory, they're a problem. We're going to see if he can carry that problematic style into the second half of the fight, because he's going to do it for 6 rounds. I promise you, he will do it for 6 rounds. Once he gets out of that 6th round, that's when hell gets unleashed, and that's where we're going to see what he's made of. But he's just as tall. He's a muscular guy. He's a pretty big guy once you see him in person. And I think he's gonna fit in nicely with Virgil size-wise. So I even go as far as to say he gets stopped very late, or he might even make it across the finish line. But I just don't see him winning rounds.
Yeah, I mean, survival there you go. Might be a win for Michael McKenzie. Yeah. Being the first guy to go the distance with Virgil Ortiz might be a win here for Michael McKenzie, because I don't know how he wins. Like I just Virgil is such a great pressure fighter. And you know, you look at his last couple of fights. He fought Maurice Hooker, who's well known for having an excellent jab. He fought Agus Kavalauskas, who has an excellent jab. Virgil Ortiz threw better jabs than both of them.
Yeah, jabbed both of them.
Yeah. And he knocked Kavalauskas down twice with what looked like a jab.
They were jabs to the gut too.
Yeah, I mean, he was putting him down with jabs. Power, this guy's jabs. Got blunt power all over the place. So I think for McKinson, it's more about can he survive than can he win. I just don't. He can make it ugly. He can probably mix it up a little bit with Ortiz, tie him up. But, you know, Ortiz fought this way against Brad Solomon, another mover several years ago. It took him a little bit of time to get to Brad Solomon, but he eventually did and knocked him out.
But McKinson has more things in his favor. Not just that. He has the inactivity. You know, first time Virgil's been out of the ring this long. He has a new team that he has to build this new chemistry with.
Now, what do you make of that? He's working with Manny Robles now.
Anyone with Manny Robles or Robert Garcia or Freddie Roach or any of these West Coast great trainers, I never worry, because they're just so great at what they do. So they can mold. Dan Goosen's another one. It's up to
Joe
the fight.
Joe
Goosen. Rest in peace, Dan. No, it's up to the fighter of how fast he catches up. It's not the trainer. They're just going to train the fighter exactly the same way they train their whole stable. It's up to the fighter to adapt and evolve. So it's not up to the trainer. It's up to the fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I did find it curious that Virgil Ortiz, undefeated, 18 knockouts, leaves Robert Garcia to go work with Manny Robles. But, you know, it's his career, and Manny Robles is a very good trainer himself. The sidelight of this, Sergio, is that in the building on Saturday night will be Terrence Crawford. He's there in support of Maurice Hooker, his stablemate. Crawford's here in the hotel right now in Texas. Crawford right now is negotiating a deal with Errol Spence. Those negotiations, from what I've been told and what Steven Espinoza at Showtime has publicly said, are kind of at a little bit of a stalemate right now. There's been a bit of a pause on those negotiations. Virgil Ortiz would be in line to face Terrence Crawford in his next fight if Crawford versus Spence cannot be made. Do you think he's ready for that kind of fight?
Virgil's ready, but I think he's ready to compete. I don't think he's ready to beat, you know, a Bud Crawford. But yeah, I think he can go in there and make it a hell of a fight. I just think after that, the technique and the experience and just the pound for pound skill that Crawford brings to the table will outmatch the youth. But yeah, he's ready. Virgil Ortiz, what, ranked number one?
Ranked number one by the WBO.
You don't get ranked that highly unless you're ready for a world title. So, yes, he's ready for anybody. And I'm talking about Errol Spence. I'm talking about all these other names. But can he beat them? Can he cross the finish line? Can he carry a – can he? What's he going to do when plan A and B aren't working, which he's going to need? He's going to need a plan C and D with these guys. And that is where you start questioning it. And then that's when you learn. That's when you learn. Like when, you know, Canelo lost with Mayweather, he learned. You know, what was a recent one that you said it was going to be a good loss for him? There's a lot of losses that are learning. They're not just really bad for your career. You pick something up and you move on.
Yeah, it's an excellent fight. And if I'm Golden Boy and the Spence-Crawford fight falls apart, I move quickly to make Crawford versus Ortiz, because that's a big fight in Texas and Southern California, wherever you go. And Ortiz can't be discounted. Like, he's got power. And Crawford, now in his mid-30s, maybe slowed down a little bit. And that could be a fight that Virgil Ortiz could even pull off an upset and get a win. All right, finally, on the undercard of this show is what I think is going to be the best fight of the show.
Woo!
Maurice Hooker, former 140-pound champion, going up against Blair the Flair Cobbs in a welterweight fight. Sergio, this is exactly what an undercard fight should look like. You've got a crossroads fight between two guys over the age of 30 who are looking to get back in contention. Both these guys coming off knockout losses. For Hooker, it was a year plus ago against Virgil Ortiz. For Blair Cobbs, more recently against Alexis Rocha. The winner will get right back into the welterweight picture for a big fight. The loser, probably done as a high-level fighter, or at least a contender, in the 147-pound division. What do you think of this fight?
No, not probably. They are. They are, because they realize not only, especially if they lose by another knockout.
Yeah.
You know, there's phases in a fighter's career, and they're in their 30s already. They already experienced what it's like to fight a formidable opponent. It's not even championship level. Alexis Rocha wasn't a championship fighter yet, but he got... It was a hell of a fight, Blair Cobbs. He put on a good show. They were the main event, but he came up short and got stopped by a guy that hasn't proven himself on the championship level either. So you already got stopped by someone that's not that. Maurice Hooker at least got stopped by champions. He has amateur pedigree. He's already picked up a strap, and he's only lost to, you know, really, you know, hard punchers. Ramirez, a beast, you know. So Virgil Ortiz, a future beast, and he's proved it on the championship level because he's beaten former champions. Ortiz has. So I just, that's why I gotta favor Maurice Hooker in this fight. The technique, the long jab, the 80-inch span, you know, to get past that, and then the body shots for a tall fighter. He has
very good body punching.
Excellent body punching. Yeah, I just think it's gonna be too much for Blair Flair because Cobbs has a bad thing about leaving his chin up, and it cost him with Rocha. You know, once the fight starts getting into the later rounds, his technique goes out the window, and it's going to catch him in this fight as well. But I do like one thing that Cobbs is bringing. I like the mindset that he's bringing. You know, he's not the showman. He's not getting the attention. He's not doing the self-promoting. He's been real humble. Been real quiet, and that's what
getting knocked out can do that to you.
That's what a loss does to you. So now he knows, hey, wait a minute. You know, I'm not as good as I said I was, and I better shut up and just win now. And I think that's what he's doing. I saw him at the we're eating dinner last night here in the hotel, and I try to get some things out of him before the fighter meeting, and he's real quiet, real subdued. That's the word, subdued. And he's I'm just ready. You know, he could see the hunger in his eye, but he didn't want to talk. He wanted to fight. And that's what you want out of fighters. You want more fighting than talking, and I think we're going to see that. It's going to be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, I on paper, I favor Maurice Hooker for all the reasons you kind of laid out there. The wild card in all this is that Hooker has been really inactive. You know, he has fought, what, twice now since 2019, that loss to Jose Ramirez. One was that 44-second destruction he had, you know, months after the Ramirez loss. The other was that loss, knockout loss to Virgil Ortiz, where he fought some pretty well early in that fight, but then broke his hand and was getting beat up towards the very end. So that's a bit of an unknown. Like, what is Hooker going to look like after this long layoff? And Cobbs, even though he was knocked out, maybe a little bit sharper because he was in the ring back in March. But all things being equal, I look at Hooker. He has been stopped twice. But he has been stopped twice at the highest levels. He was stopped by Jose Ramirez. He was stopped by Virgil Ortiz. Cobbs not only was stopped by Alexis Rocha, but you go back even further. He was knocked down by Steve Villalobos. He was knocked down by Carlos Ortiz. Like, he has been, he's vulnerable with that chin that's out there. So I think Hooker, if he's right, if he's the Maurice Hooker we've seen for the last few years, should be able to win this fight and should be able to do it by knockout. But I give both these guys a lot of credit for stepping in and taking this fight. Cobbs could have come back on maybe an untelevised undercard fight, made a couple of bucks, worked his way back into contention. But just, what, 5 months after getting knocked out, he's back in the ring, and he's facing another contender at 147. So all credit to these guys for doing it.
All credit for everybody involved in this, even the matchmaker. Shout out Robert Diaz, the promotion, you know, Golden Boy, putting their fighter that could be an attraction, a future attraction, you know, in with another fighter of Hooker's caliber. But there's another thing that you got to touch on. Hooker has had issues making weight before. He blows up in weight. He gets really...
Not 147. 140 had issues making weight.
Well, at 140 he had issues, but he's still a tall, growing fighter, and he feels out, you know, really, really nicely. So maybe
he's very lean though.
I'm lean, and I was 28 pounds overweight.
Yeah, but you made once. Yeah, but that's because you drank your face
no,
off.
No, man,
at
I like food too. I like
okay,
fine
you ate
delicacies.
Your face off at Caesars.
I ate and drank, but yes. So there's another thing.
Did they comp you a room every night there?
Man, they copped me for weeks. Shout out Caesar's Palace. What's up, Shakes? No, but you know, whenever you're inactive, not only does it affect you mentally, but physically, because you grow into that weight. So, you know, Hooker has had weight issues, even if it's at 140, they're weight issues. And I think they're just gonna go up to 147. And with Cobbs, I've heard that he had, you know, he's been knocked out in sparring.
Yeah.
You know, yes. So not only as it happened, you know, in a live fight, it's happened in sparring. So maybe that doubt is starting to go into his head, realizing that maybe he's not cut out for this. So this is going to be win or go home. And that's what we're here for. So shout out everyone involved, because that's the type of fight that fans want to see. And Texas has rabid fans.
Yeah, one of the best undercard fights that you could make out there. And all leads up to the main event. Virgil Ortiz, Michael McKinson. All right, Sergio, go golf.
Tee time, baby.
When we come back, my conversation with Virgil Ortiz.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fight fans, come out swinging with a no-sweat first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers get up to $1,000 in free bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING. Bet on who will win, knockouts, when the fight will end, and so much more. So if you haven't tried FanDuel, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. Just join now with the promo code BOXING to get a no-sweat first bet. That's up to $1,000 back in free bets if your first bet doesn't win, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. All right, Virgil Ortiz is here, welterweight contender. He is back in the ring on Saturday when he takes on Michael McKinson. That's a fight you can see live on DAZN. First fight, and have you ever had this much time off in between fights?
No, and it sucks because I like to stay fighting.
What's it been like kind of sitting out, going through everything that you've gone through? What's that been like for you?
I'm not going to lie. It's a little depressing, you know, because it's like, how do I say this? You know, I don't want to compare it to the Great Depression where no one's working and all that stuff. But that's kind of what, I guess I had a little taste of it. You know, I'm just at home. I feel like a bum. I'm not doing anything. I'm used to working hard and working hard every day. And when I go from that, and just not fighting for a whole year, I feel like I'm not doing anything. I feel like I have no purpose. So it was really hard. Just some people would think that, oh, that's the life. You're not doing nothing. You're just staying home. But it's a hard thing to go through when, you know, you're supposed to be doing something.
Yeah, because people knew you as a seven-day-a-week kind of workout guy. Like, you want to be back in action as much as it must have been really tough to have to sit on the sidelines and deal with your issue, with the medical issue, and then get back into the flow.
Yeah, I mean, you basically said it. So it's just I'm very happy to finally be stepping back into the ring. You know, even all this stuff, I missed it. You know, I'm genuinely happy to leave my house right now and to be doing this stuff.
So clarify for people exactly what happened before the last fight, because when it was revealed your diagnosis, you had people like me too going on WebMD to try to figure out what exactly your illness was.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what people thought it was. Mm. People thought that my weight was too high and I'm over here trying to lose it too much, and I had too much weight to lose. That wasn't it. People thought I was on steroids, you know. That was obviously, that's not it. You know, I'm freaking in Vada, you know, I'm in that stuff. And I don't need to take it. I got natural power, I guess. But so what the story was is, so it's no secret that I was going to train with Canelo. And in October, I started training in October to get ready for my fight. In January, I was supposed to fight McKinson in January. Mm-hmm. And we were going to head out to the Canelo camp after his fight against Plant, because he fought him in November. So we're like, all right, we're going to get ready for the Canelo camp, so we make sure we're in shape, whatever comes in our way, because we don't know what to expect. So we're training already hardcore October, November, December. December comes around. The camp didn't go as we thought it was. We weren't getting sparring. You know, it's the holidays. No one's really fighting around the holidays. You know what? This isn't working out. You know, we need a better camp. This is not going to work out. So we didn't fight January. We fought March. So then January, February, March, October, November, December, January, February, March. That's 6 months of hardcore training. If people know how I trained, they know how hard I trained. My body just couldn't take it no more by the time March came. So my body was literally breaking down.
How scary was it to, you know, go into a hospital and be diagnosed with something, which I'm sure you were Googling yourself.
Yeah, I mean, they told me this word that I didn't even know how to pronounce. I didn't know how to spell.
Like, I still know how to pronounce it. I'll have it before I go on air on Saturday. I'll know how to pronounce
it. Yeah, so it was, you know, I mean, I definitely think a lot of people were definitely more scared than I was. People thought I was dying. Mm. I mean, I'm pretty sure it would have got to that point if I kept, maybe if I even would have fought. But, you know, luckily we caught it in time. But, you know, as we were getting closer to the fight, my body just kept breaking down and breaking down. We thought it was fatigueness. We thought it was going to go away, just normal fatigueness. It wasn't going away. My body just wasn't taking it anymore. And when they told me that it was, they actually identified the problem, I was a little relieved because to me it was like, dude, what's the problem? How are we going to prevent this from happening again? Or what, you know? So when they told me that there is a problem and they know exactly what it is, I was like, ah, okay, we know what it is. You know, it's kind of like, it's not a mystery anymore. Mm. It's kind of like people are afraid of the dark, not because of the dark, but what's in it, you know? So it's something like that. We know what the problem is, so we know, basically.
So you talked about you were going to train with Canelo. Now you're with Manny Robles. I think it surprised a lot of people that you left Robert Garcia to begin with. You were undefeated on a championship path. Walk me through kind of that decision, why you decided to make the change.
I mean, it's honestly, it's nothing like personal or anything. You know, it's just business. We just feel like if you need to make a move, you need to make a move. You know, that's just the bottom line. It's just,
what did it have anything to do with the fact that Robert didn't go to your fight and went to Josh Franco's fight?
No, at least not for me. Mm-hmm. They never asked me, but if they were to ask me, I would have told Robert to go to Josh's fight because he needed him. Mm-hmm. Josh needed Robert more than I did. I had my dad that's been training me since I was five. Mm. So I definitely would have pushed Robert that way anyways if he would have asked me.
So Manny Robles been the game a long time. Has he added something to what you're doing? Is he? I mean, what difference can or will Manny Robles have with you?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, they have a lot of youngsters there. They definitely push me. They look up to me, but I look at them as teammates, and I love watching them spar. They're very competitive towards each other, and I love that. It reminds me of my gym back in Dallas. And Manny's a definitely very knowledgeable trainer. He definitely has added some stuff into me, and I like the way that I'm looking right now.
You are coming off probably your best win against Kavalauskas, where you fought a warrior, you knocked out the guy, knocked him out before, and Bud Crawford knocked him out. As you look back on that fight, what do you take away from it? Do you feel like that was the best performance of your career?
Mm,
And you're a very difficult, you grade yourself poorly, I know, at times. Every time I've interviewed you, you don't always say it's the best.
No, I wouldn't say it's the best. I would say the Herrera fight was my best. You know, I think I made like two mistakes in that fight where I shouldn't have made. But I think that was my best fight. The Kovalevskis fight was definitely the fight that I feel like I proved to everyone, including me, that I belong up there. So,
and now you get Michael McKinson again, a very different kind of fighter than Kovalevskis. I've kind of thought he looked a little bit like Brad Solomon. I'm sure you've heard that comparison before. Slick. How do you feel about this matchup specifically?
I think it's a very good matchup. You know, I mean, you got people thinking that I'm going to lose. When you got people thinking I'm going to lose, then you know it's a good fight. Mm-hmm. You know, and I welcome the opinions. I don't care if you're rooting against me or not. Mm-hmm. So it's very competitive, and you're just going to have to wait and see.
You've said this feels like just you have to prove yourself to some people again. Why do you feel that way?
I think because I've been off a year, people have just simply forgotten how I am in the ring. So I just got to remind them.
Got to come out to that Roy Jones song. Y'all must have forgot.
For real.
Last thing for you. For the second time in 2 or 3 years, you'll be fighting in front of Bud Crawford. Will be in the crowd as well. I know you're not thinking about Bud Crawford. You're thinking about Michael McKinson. You've always been focused on the guy in front of you. But the last time you did it in the ring after, you said, Bud, I'm ready for you. You want that fight. Bud's dealing with his own stuff right now. But if that fight came along later this year, would you feel like you're ready for it?
I think so. You know, that's definitely a fight I wouldn't pass up. Like you said, he's definitely tied up right now, so don't ask me that question if I'm going to call him out or not. He has his own thing going on. I'm not going to clout chase or anything like that. So,
not even in the ring afterwards if you win. You wouldn't say anything?
No, I'll tell them to hurry up, make a decision. But, we don't know what's going on between the deals. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, so...
It's boxing. There wouldn't be,
exactly.
Wouldn't be boxing without the drama.
Exactly. So,
well, Virgil, welcome back, man. Glad to see you back in the ring. You're always exciting. And I think this is going to be an interesting fight against McKinson. And hopefully we see you real active for the next couple of years.
Thank you.
When we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddy, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's time now for this week's picks, brought to you by our friends over at FanDuel. And I really hope you've been gambling with me for these last couple of months, because if you have, you'd probably be heading into the fall with a lot more money in your pocket. Last week, I told you to pick Danny Garcia. That was kind of an easy one. Danny Garcia was a pretty significant favorite going up against Jose Benavidez Jr., but I told you to take Danny Garcia by decision. That was a lot narrower odds. What does Garcia do? He goes out, and wins by decision. Got a little bit nervous when that first scorecard was read a draw. Sitting there thinking, was boxing going to screw me again? But Danny Garcia, he comes away with a decision win. Now, bit of a light weekend this weekend with the Jake Paul Aseem Rockman card canceled. But I am locked in on the Virgil Ortiz, Michael McKinson welterweight fight. Now, Ortiz is a massive favorite in this one. Minus 1,600, according to FanDuel. It's almost not worth making that bet. If you want to make the bet, you want to load up, I think Virgil Ortiz wins, one way or the other. McKinson, undefeated, but only two knockouts on his resume. He's slick. He's complicated. He might make life difficult for Ortiz in terms of getting that knockout, but I don't see any way that Michael McKinson wins. So it's pretty much a lock in my mind that Ortiz wins this fight. Now, the method of victory is where you have an opportunity to make some money. Ortiz by knockout is minus 290. So you still got to put some money up to get some money back on a bet like that. But this is a guy with 18 wins, 18 knockouts. He's excellent at fighting southpaws, or at least he has been the couple of times that he's done it. McKinson is a southpaw. And I liken this fight with Michael McKinson to a fight Ortiz had a few years ago against Brad Solomon, who's also slick, a bit of a mover. He gave Ortiz some problems in terms of tracking him down early, but Ortiz ultimately got to him and got the stoppage. I think Ortiz gets the stoppage in this one. Take Virgil Ortiz to win. Take Virgil Ortiz to win by knockout. Make yourself some money over at FanDuel. Those are my picks this week. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Sergio Mora and Virgil Ortiz for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.